Welcome once again to Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community here on WCOM LP Chapel Hill in Carrboro. This is Ernie Hood. I am a freelance science writer, and each week here on the program, we bring you cutting-edge information about what's going on in science here in the Triangle area, one of the world's leading hubs of scientific research and development. You can email us at radioinvivo@earthlink.net, and you can access a full archive of all of our hundreds of past programs at radioinvivo.net. The Burroughs Welcome Fund is a Golden Voices underwriter here on WCOM and Radio In Vivo. The Burroughs Welcome Fund supports excellence in science education across North Carolina. The fund believes that providing students with engaging and interactive curriculum helps to spark curiosity for careers in science, mathematics, and technology. You can learn about education grant opportunities for North Carolina schools and teachers at www.bwfund.org. Radio In Vivo is underwritten by the National Evolutionary Synthesis Center in Durham. NESENT is a nonprofit science center dedicated to cross-disciplinary research in evolution. NESENT is a collaborative effort of Duke University, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and North Carolina State University, and is sponsored by the National Science Foundation. Radio In Vivo is also underwritten by the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research. Since it was founded in 1989, NCABR's mission has been to promote public understanding of and support for bioscience research and careers. NCABR offers many resources for both researchers and K-12 science teachers, including conferences and free professional development workshops. To learn more, visit ncabr.org. And we are thrilled to welcome our latest supporter on board, Mr. Steve Brockman. Radio In Vivo is underwritten by a gift from Steve for the advancement of science education. It's also a great pleasure to welcome the underwriting support of Dr. Bob Conder and Dr. Alana Conder at Carolina Neuropsychological Service in Raleigh. They specialize in assessing and treating brain disorders. You can learn more about Carolina Neuropsychological Service at carolinacns.com. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank this terrific group of underwriters for their support. One sentence from one of my guests' recent publications says it all, and I quote, "Pancreatic cancer is a lethal cancer with minimal survival for patients due to lack of early detection and limited success with treatment strategies." In addition to being one of the deadliest, pancreatic cancer is also one of the most common cancers in the United States, the fourth most common in both men and women, behind such better-known actors as lung, prostate, breast, and colon cancers. More than 45,000 new cases will occur in the U.S. in 2013, with an astonishing 85% mortality rate. This week's guest on Radio In Vivo has made it his life's work to conduct some of the absolutely necessary basic science to ultimately result in improvements in these morbidity and mortality rates for pancreatic cancer. Dr. Antonio Baines is an assistant professor in biology with a joint appointment in the Cancer Research Program at the Julius L. Chambers Biomedical Biotechnology Research Institute, or BBRI, at North Carolina Central University in Durham. He also holds an adjunct professorship in the Department of Pharmacology at UNC Chapel Hill. Tony received his bachelor's degree in biology at Norfolk State University in 1995, and his PhD in pharmacology and toxicology from the University of Arizona in 2001. He did his postdoc in pharmacology at UNC Chapel Hill, and he has been on the faculty at NC Central since 2006. Tony, welcome to Radio In Vivo.
Thank you very much.
To be able to put your research program, which we will discuss in depth, into the proper context, I'd like for our listeners to be able to learn something more about pancreatic cancer than just the stark statistics I gave in the introduction. What is it about pancreatic cancer that really makes it so terrifying?
Okay, well, first of all, thanks again for inviting me. I really do appreciate the opportunity to talk about not only my research, but about this deadly disease, pancreatic cancer.
Indeed.
So first, I guess, let me start off by telling people what is the function of the pancreas, just to give them an appreciation what the pancreas, how important the pancreas is in your body. Mm-hmm. So the pancreas has various functions, but two major functions is one, it produces digestive enzymes to break down food in your small intestine. So it's really important in digestion. Secondly, it's important in controlling your blood sugar levels. So it's also responsible for making insulin, which control blood sugar levels. And so those two major functions hopefully gives your audience a context of why when people come down with pancreatic cancer, mm-hmm. It's a very lethal and deadly disease.
And so you cannot do without your pancreas.
So for those fortunate patients that are able to receive the surgery for treating against pancreatic cancer, which unfortunately removes most or all your pancreas, mm-hmm. those persons have to live on supplements and also have to take medicine for the controlling their blood sugar level. So mm-hmm. it is possible living without a pancreas, but okay. it leads to a very tough and challenging life in terms of having to supplement those things that your pancreas usually does mm-hmm. normally every day.
But it's not typical that it's surgically accessible.
Right, right. Yes. So only about 10% of all pancreatic cancer patients are eligible for surgery. Because again, the problem is when pancreatic cancer is found, it's usually already metastasized to other parts of your body, like your liver, for example. Mm-hmm. And for those types of cancers, surgery really won't really do much because it's the metastasis that really kills the patient. But for those patients that are able to get the surgery, and that's about 10% of all pancreatic cancer patients are eligible for surgery, for those persons, if they're able to survive the surgery and able to bounce back after the surgery, they can live a relatively normal life. Just having to be on medicine for the rest of their life.
Well, I understand part of the major challenge of pancreatic cancer is that it's very difficult to detect.
Right.
And then once it is detected, right. it's very difficult to treat.
Right, right. So people probably wonder why is pancreatic cancer so lethal compared to the other cancers? Well, one is we can't detect it early, as you just mentioned. We can't detect it early. There's no biomarker. There's no test. So, for example, in colon cancer, for people they're concerned about getting colon cancer, they can do a colonoscopy, at the recommended age, mm-hmm. Around 40 or 50, depending on your history.
Mm-hmm. Prostate.
PSA. So, mammograms for breast cancer. So again, mm-hmm. there's various tests out there for some of these cancers, but for pancreatic cancer, there's no tests available to detect it early. So that's one issue. So unfortunately, when pancreatic cancer is found, it's usually found by accident. And again, the majority of the cancers have already metastasized when they're found. That's one issue.
That's one of the exciting things about your work, which we, as I said, we will get into, but continue.
Right. So one issue, again, is detection. That's mm-hmm. one issue. And the second issue, we don't really have any good treatments for pancreatic cancer. Again, as I mentioned before, surgery works for a very small population, a very small percentage of the population that come down with pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. But for most patients, chemotherapy is what's recommended. And unfortunately, for most pancreatic cancers, they're resistant to the treatments that we offer. They're either resistant or they'll become resistant over time. And so unfortunately, there's not really much that we can do once someone gets pancreatic cancer. Again, doesn't mean everybody dies from pancreatic cancer. It's just unfortunate the majority do succumb to it over time.
Why is pancreatic cancer so uniquely resistant to, I understand, not only chemotherapy but radiation therapy as well?
Right, right. Well, so unfortunately, pancreatic cancer is not unique as compared to other cancers. So many cancers are become resistant to chemotherapy and radiotherapy over time. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, fortunately, unfortunately, how you look at it, pancreatic cancer is very similar to other cancers that over time they develop resistance. And I don't know if anybody really knows why. There's a lot of theories out there, but the main idea is that over time cancer is a very heterogeneous population of cells, and some cells will be sensitive to chemotherapy and radiotherapy, but over time you may develop a population of cells that over time will upregulate genes that will make it resistant to the treatments that we have to offer. So unfortunately, pancreatic cancer falls in the same line with other cancers that over time, many cancers become resistant.
That sounds like a very similar concept to the buildup of antibiotic resistance.
It's the same, basically it's the same scenario in terms of you treat people when they're sick with antibiotics, and over time, you may develop a population of bacteria that become resistant to the drug. And that's why I strongly recommend cutting back on overuse of antibiotics, because the same issue will occur that you unfortunately would have these types of sicknesses that potentially will not be treatable with antibiotics.
Sure. Well, so we have a disease that is diagnosed typically at an advanced stage, resistant to treatment, and I understand that in adding to all of that, it's also very aggressive.
Right. So, again, there's a lot of great research being done by my colleagues in pancreatic cancer, and they have been able to show that for some reason that the timeline of normal cells in the pancreas becoming cancerous seems to be very short. That timeline seems to be very short compared to other cancers, and that's also believed to be the reason why pancreatic cancer is so much more lethal than the others, because of that short timeline of progression from going from normal to abnormal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand in the research I was doing that the 5-year survival rate for pancreatic cancer is just 6%.
It's sad. It's very sad. It's very sad. And unfortunately, in the past 40 years of people studying pancreatic cancer, we really haven't made any large headway in being able to offer patients better treatments. Mm-hmm. And so, again,
I saw that, and I was curious as to why that is, because there's been so much progress in so many other types of cancer.
Right. So I think it's a variety of concerns and issues. I think one, and not saying one cancer is more important than others, but a lot of focus has been shown on breast cancers, prostate cancers, colon cancers, lung cancers, and those are the top three cancers that kill people as well. And so I think a lot of focus has been shown on those cancers, and rightly so, because those cancers can be very deadly as well. And so I think because the focus has been on those cancers, there's been less focus on pancreatic cancer. Because again, pancreatic cancer is it's the fourth most common cause of cancer deaths. And so, I think people have focused on those top three for a long time. And also, I would say that I think a lot of times funding becomes an issue because of those cancers being focused on a lot. There's been a lot of outpouring of funding by the government, such as the NIH, for example, or various private organizations as well on those cancers. And I think funding is really important for really pushing a cancer, pushing the research on a particular cancer forward. So, I think pancreatic cancer has lagged behind a long time compared to those other cancers that I just mentioned. But I will say that over the past, I would say 5 years, there's been a greater push and more funding thrown at pancreatic cancer to help improve the diagnosis and the treatment of pancreatic cancer.
I see. Well, Tony, do you think we'll see pancreatic cancer brought under better control in the near future, or are we still very far from the day when the diagnosis is not a virtual death sentence?
So I have a cautious optimism. Because of all the wonderful research that's being done by my colleagues in pancreatic cancer in terms of trying to understand it better and trying to determine what treatments will work for, helping to get it under control. Because of all the wonderful research that's being done, as well as the development of many different types of animal models that recapitulates a lot of the progression of pancreatic cancer in humans, because of all that type of research that's going on, I really do feel that in the future years to come, we will have a better control over pancreatic cancer. Again, I think there's still a lot more work that needs to be done.
Sure.
But based on the research I've been involved in, as well as research that others have been involved in as it relates to understanding pancreatic cancer, I feel optimistic that down the road we will have a better control over pancreatic cancer.
Well, that's very good to hear. Tony, what led you to focus your research specifically on pancreatic cancer? Was it, as we've discussed, the very large need for new knowledge derived from basic research to begin to unravel such a dreaded killer, or was there a personal connection or combination of a lot of things?
Right. So I would say that my interest in pancreatic cancer formed when I was a graduate student at the University of Arizona at the Arizona Cancer Center. Mm-hmm. At that time, I was studying colon cancer, which is another deadly disease, number 3.
Sure.
And so I was studying colon cancer at the cancer center, and the cancer center director at that time, I think his name was Dr. Salmon, he came down with pancreatic cancer. And that was my first kind of introduction to pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. First of all, I was always interested in the GI, the gastrointestinal system. I've always been interested in the different organs that make up the GI system. Mm-hmm. And so studying colon cancer kind of makes sense to me because it was part of the GI system. And then the pancreas came aboard, which is also a part of the GI system. And so mm-hmm. I never thought about it before. That's probably part of my interest. But the other interest was, again, I got introduced when the director of the cancer center at that time came down with pancreatic cancer and unfortunately succumbed to it.
Sure. How quickly?
I would say within a year. I would mm-hmm. say within a year. I would say probably within a year. Because again, he being the director of the cancer center, he had a lot of resources at his disposal in terms of treatments. But unfortunately, again, as I said before, even with our best treatments, most people still succumb to the disease.
Sure.
And then his replacement, who came to take over the Arizona Cancer Center, Dr. Van Hoff, was a pancreatic cancer researcher himself. Well known in the field, and I got to know him while I was finishing up my graduate studies, and we had great conversations together, and he even offered me a position to do a postdoc in his laboratory. So that was my introduction to pancreatic cancer, and but I chose to leave to come back to the East Coast where I'm from, but I went to do pancreatic cancer after I been exposed to it as a grad student indirectly. And so that's when I decided to come to UNC Chapel Hill and to study pancreatic cancer. And I had the opportunity to do that under two PIs, two scientists at UNC Chapel Hill, Dr. Channing Durr and Dr. Adrian Cox. Mm-hmm. They were both studying a mutation that occurs in pancreatic cancer as well as in other cancers. Called KRAS, oncogene called KRAS, which is a gene that's needed for normal cell growth, but it can become mutated in many cancers. And for some reason, in pancreatic cancer, almost all pancreatic cancers have this KRAS mutation, whereas in other cancers, you see around 30 to 50% of the time, but pancreatic cancer, you always see this mutation mm-hmm. in KRAS. And that's what led me to their laboratories to try to understand the role of this particular gene as it relates to pancreatic cancer, because you would think that with a gene being mutated that frequently in a cancer, that would be a good molecular target for hopefully developing drugs against. So that's what led me to pancreatic cancer.
Okay.
And then that's what led me to the research, to some of the research that I'm doing now through UNC Chapel Hill.
Sure. Well, Tony, in recent years, cancers have come to be, as we know, classified according to their molecular profiles, beyond simply the organ of origin.
Right.
And you've kind of already touched on it, but how does that concept apply to pancreatic cancer?
Right. So I guess I need to say a few things first. One, when I say pancreatic cancer, I'm focusing really on one type of pancreatic cancer.
Mm-hmm. The KRAS?
It's called ductal adenocarcinoma of the pancreas. So the pancreas is made
up. I had to look up that acronym. I kept running across it in your publications. What is that now?
I can understand that. So the pancreas is made up of many different cells. As I told you before, the pancreas have a variety of different functions, making digestive enzymes, making insulin, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that occurs due to this pancreas having a variety of different cells with different functions. So because the pancreas is made up of different types of cells, that lends it to being able to form different types of cancers of the pancreas. Some cancers of the pancreas are more prevalent than others. At the end of the day, cancer can kill you if it has the opportunity to metastasize and leave the pancreas and go to other parts of your body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the pancreas that I focus my research on is the one that's most prevalent, and that's called... Those cancers arise from cells that line the pancreatic duct. I don't want to get into too much into terminology.
But
the pancreas, there's a duct in the pancreas called the pancreatic duct.
Okay.
And that's where digestive juices that are made in the pancreas get dumped into, and that duct goes to your small intestine, again, to aid in digestion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the cells that line that pancreatic duct that can go awry and unfortunately become abnormal and over time can lead to becoming cancerous.
Sure.
And the cancers that arise from the pancreatic duct are referred to as pancreatic ductal adenocarcinomas. So cells that line that duct that go awry and become cancerous, that's the cancer that I'm referring to. And the reason why I'm focusing on that cancer is because that's the most prevalent of all the different cancers that can form in the pancreas. That's the most prevalent one. So you can have many types of pancreatic cancers, but the one that seems to be most prevalent, and unfortunately, people will succumb to it. Will be the ones that form from that duct. But there's different other types of pancreatic cancer. So for a quick second, Steve mm-hmm. Jobs died of pancreatic cancer.
Oh right.
But his was a different pancreatic cancer. It wasn't the pancreatic cancer that I study.
I see.
But again, that just shows you that no matter what cancer or the pancreas, again, if you don't catch it in time and not able to treat it, it can kill you.
So what is the molecular profile study?
Right. So now going back to the cancer that I study, pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma, there's a variety of genes that are mutated. Now what's interesting is that, with all those different pancreatic cancers that I alluded to, all of them have different mutation profiles, which makes it even much more complicated mm-hmm. in trying to treat pancreatic cancer because there's different mutation profiles.
As is the case with most cancers.
And even to make it even more challenging, just to give your audience an appreciation of how complicated cancer research is.
Sure.
Even with one cancer, you can have many different types of cancers with different mutation profiles, just like in pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. Breast cancer, another example where you can have many different types of breast cancers, and each breast cancer has its own mutation profile that you're trying to target to treat. And, again, that's what makes cancer research very challenging. But going back to
makes some of the pharmacotherapies that have come out targeted to some of those specific mutations.
Right. And that's the focus, and that's my interest, molecular targeting, trying to target mm-hmm. a molecule, a protein, or enzyme that potentially could lead to decreased growth or absolute, elimination of the cancer. But the cancer I study, pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma, so again, KRAS is one of the main mutations that's found in that cancer. Again, KRAS is a normal gene that we need in all of our cells, but due to some reason, either genetic or environmental, a mutation can form in that KRAS, causing that KRAS to be on all the time, and that's mm-hmm. what can lead to excessive cell growth, et cetera, et cetera. So KRAS is one mutation that's found in pancreatic cancer. Another mutation that's found not only in pancreatic cancer but in many other cancers is a tumor suppressor gene called P53,
sure.
Which can also be mutated. So mm-hmm. so in cancers, you have this balancing act between genes that promote cell growth and genes that kind of inhibit, control cell growth. Now, there's a variety of things going on. I'm just kind of simplifying it and saying growth, cells growing, cells dying, but there's mm-hmm. a variety of players in this orchestra that's causing
signaling this, networks.
Exactly,
as well,
which is very complicated. Sure. And all these genes are involved in those signaling networks.
Mm-hmm.
So you have KRAS mutated, You have P53, a tumor suppressor gene that's not working properly. You can have these other mutations involved that are tumor suppressor genes that are turned off, other oncogenes that are turned on, P21, et cetera, et cetera. So you have all these different genes that are mutated that helps to promote a normal cell, allows it to become more and more aggressive to the point where it progresses to what we know of as cancer. So my interest and the interest of many other researchers are trying to find one or more molecules that we can target that potentially will impede that progression of normal cells becoming cancer cells in the pancreas or in other cancers as well. And so chemotherapy works by affecting the replication, the transcription, translation process of all cells, not just cancer cells.
Sure.
And so that's why a lot of people come down with severe side effects mm-hmm. when they do chemotherapy. So it's kind of like using a mallet.
Shotgun approach.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Which, again, sometimes that's the best we have, and for some people it works well. And mm-hmm. so, again, not trying to badmouth chemotherapy because it's the best we have in many cases. But the focus has now become trying to have a more selective approach where we focus on a molecule, as I said before, a protein, an enzyme, a mm-hmm. signaling pathway that's needed for the cell to grow and divide and do its normal cancer things, metastasize. And so the goal is to try to find a molecule that we can go after to slow that process down. And
now we come to your research because now we arrive at, because you have found a very promising molecular target related to the KRAS pathway that could be a prime target for therapeutic interventions.
Right. So first, to be fair, I didn't find this target specifically.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I give credit to where credit's due.
Sure.
So I study a gene similar to KRAS, as an oncogene. It's needed for growth, but can be mutated, mm-hmm. called PIM kinases. So this kinase, well, first of all, kinase is an enzyme, and what kinases do, they help to turn on other proteins.
Mm-hmm. So it's a family of genes.
It's a family, right, it's a family of genes. That's a family of them. So that's PIM1, PIM2, and PIM3, mm-hmm. PIM, PIM. Right. And these kinases are involved in a variety of different processes in the cell. Now, in terms of who found them, they were found many years ago, mainly in hemopoietic cancers like leukemias and lymphomas. They were first found there. So a lot of earlier research on PIM kinases have been in those types of cancers. But over time, researchers have found them to be involved in solid tumors such as pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to, come across this target in my readings, and found that potentially it looks as if KRAS, the gene I talked about earlier, right. which is mutated in almost all pancreatic cancers,
mm-hmm.
I came across the literature suggesting that there may be some communication between KRAS and one of the family members of the PIM kinase family, PIM1. And so that's kind of what started me to further investigate.
So there was a little bit of a eureka moment at that point.
It was. I was in my postdoc and I was near the end of my postdoc, and the idea is, okay, the goal is leave your postdoc and start your own independent research,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to figure out what type of research you're going to put your stake into.
What's your niche going
to
be?
Exactly, yeah. which is tough to find your own niche. And I was fortunate to be able to, to find some of this in the literature that allowed me to start checking it out as a possible niche. And I've been fortunate enough that it has become a good niche for me. It has become a good niche for me. Again, still a lot more work that needs to be done, but
of course,
but, yeah, but definitely seems to be playing out better than I had ever planned.
Sure. Yeah. Well, tell us more about your research related to PIM1.
Right. So let's go back to KRAS for a second. So again, KRAS is a gene needed for normal growth. It's involved in a variety of processes in the cell. But again, it's mutated in almost all pancreatic cancers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would make you think, well, this would be a good molecular target to go after. You know, if it's mutant almost all pancreatic cancers involved in growth, if we can somehow inhibit it or knock it out or do something mm-hmm. to prevent it from working properly, then potentially we can drastically have an impact on the development of and progression of pancreatic cancer.
But it's not that simple.
As right? most science and research is.
Indeed,
are. Indeed. Are. Yeah, so it definitely was not simple at all. So from 20 or 30 years of research on RAS, so we've been focused specifically on KRAS, but you know KRAS is a member of the RAS superfamily. So it's, again, it's another family of genes.
Mm-hmm.
But after 20, 30, almost 40 years of research on RAS, we have yet to be successful in developing an anti-RAS drug for the clinic for a variety of reasons. It's, you know, there's many different types of RAS.
Not that the pharmacological community has not been trying.
They have. They have tried. Yes. The pharmaceutical industries have definitely invested a whole lot of money, as well as academic institutions, on mm-hmm. trying to target KRAS because you know again it seems like the perfect target. And we still are looking at. We still are focusing and studying RAS mm-hmm. even to this day because okay. people still believe that you know this could be almost like the holy grail of pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. So that's still. Large labs at UNC and all across this country still focusing on trying to understand how we can potentially target RAS
okay.
because of its potential significance in really making pancreatic cancers as well as other cancers more treatable. So because we haven't been successful in targeting RAS for anti-therapy, the idea is, well, if we can't directly target RAS by, you know, impacting itself, by impacting it directly, then maybe we can have an impact on RAS signaling against, you know, in the cell. There's a whole bunch of signaling networks that are important for the cell to do a variety of different things. If we can't target RAS signaling, if we can't target RAS directly, maybe we can target RAS signaling by impacting something that RAS talks to.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where my interest comes in. So okay. I study again, this family of genes called PIM kinases, and the literature suggests that PIM can be modulated by RAS. And so there was some preliminary findings that kind of made me more interested and wanted to further investigate that. So basically, I conducted preliminary studies at UNC, and then I took those studies with me when I joined the faculty at North Carolina Central University in the Department of Biology,
mm-hmm.
as well as, in, as you said earlier, in the Biomedical Biotechnology Research Institute, Julius L. Chambers, BBRI.
Mm-hmm.
I took that research with me at North Carolina Central to start up my own independent research and was able to further understand that relationship. And we did see that RAS was able to have an effect, was able to modulate PIM kinases, specifically PIM1, did a little bit of PIM2 and really nothing to PIM3. So that was interesting because, again, the idea was, okay, if we can't target RAS, maybe we can target something that RAS talks to.
Sure.
And from my research, it's looked as if PIM was one potential target mm-hmm. that we could go after.
And you found, I understand, abnormally high levels of PIM1 in pancreatic cancer patients.
Right. Right. So in my first publication that I was able to publish as a faculty at NCCU, we looked at PIM1's role in pancreatic cancer as well as its relationship with KRAS. And in that research, we were able to find that one, PIM1 was overexpressed in tumor tissues of the pancreas more than normal pancreas tissues, as well as in cell lines of the, you know, the pancreas as well, pancreatic cancer as well. So we saw upregulation of PIM1 in the tumor versus the normal, which is good because if we're looking at PIM as a possible molecular target, then the idea is you want to make sure there's more of it in the tumor than in the normal, because again, we're trying to,
right.
We're trying to not to use the mallet hammer approach mm-hmm. like chemotherapy. So we're trying to be more targeted with our treatment. So that's one thing we found, which was really cool. And then we were able to show that when we modulated KRAS, either decreases activation or increased it, we saw that PIM expression followed, PIM activity followed. So when we decreased KRAS, we saw decreased PIM.
So that relationship became
more clear. Right, absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So when we decreased KRAS, we saw decreased PIM expression activity. And when we increased KRAS, overexpressed KRAS in cells, we saw the reciprocal as well with the PIM. And so, again, strongly showing that KRAS signaling seemed to be able to modulate PIM expression activity, which is cool because, again, it shows that they're talking to, you know, that KRAS is talking to PIM.
Sure.
Again, you know, there's still more work that needs to be done to figure out that connection, but at least we can say that modulation definitely seems to be occurring between KRAS and PIM.
So you've experimentally been able to actually modulate PIM-1 levels see what kind of impact that had.
So the goal of this paper is one to, you know, to investigate the relationship between KRAS and PIM, specifically PIM-1. And then the second goal of this research was to further understand the role PIM-1 plays in pancreatic cancer. Because again, there was a previous paper that came out looking at another family member of PIM, PIM-3 in pancreatic cancer. So that paper came out before our studies, but nobody really looked at PIM-1. Mm-hmm. And all these PIMs are believed to have similar functions, but they also have distinct functions as well. And so, again, nobody knew about PIM-1 in pancreatic cancer. Most of the research had been mainly focused on, again, as I said before, hematopoietic cancers, leukemias, lymphomas, and also in prostate cancer, but nobody looked at pancreatic. So we were able to show that PIM-1, you know, from doing various genetic experiments where we were able to inhibit the expression of PIM, we were able to show that when you decrease PIM expression, you saw a decrease in growth, we saw a decrease in invasion, decrease in
which implies that it would be a ripe target for therapeutic intervention.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Again, more studies need to be done, of course, but absolutely, definitely, you want to be able to show that. You know, you want to be able to show a phenotype. You know, okay, we show that we can, you know, we show that it's overexpressed in the cancer. But you know, what's the role of this particular molecule? And we show that when you inhibit the expression, it has a variety of different effects which leads to decreased growth, decreased invasion. It also made the cells more sensitive to radiation. And again, as I said earlier, pancreatic cancer is usually radio resistant. But we would show that when we were able to modulate PIM and decrease its expression and activity, we saw cells being more sensitive to radiation treatment. And so we were really happy with this paper.
It's really changing the phenotype then.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's
affecting it.
Yeah, right. This PIM molecule, again, PIM has a variety of different functions in the cell. And PIM, I didn't mention this earlier, PIM is, okay, so it's an oncogene, so it's needed for growth.
Mm-hmm.
It's anti-apoptotic, so it basically prevents cell death. By inhibiting PIM, we're able to promote cell death in the cancer, which is a good thing.
Yeah, which is what you want.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Which is more normal function.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So again, we were happy to be able to, you know, show these effects with PIM-1, which hadn't been shown before in pancreatic cancer. And I want to say that, you know, again, this work, you know, this work was a collaborative effort by people in my laboratory, students and postdocs, as well as grad students, as well as collaborators at UNC Chapel Hill as well.
I see. My guest on Radio In Vivo today is Dr. Antonio Baines, and as you have probably discerned by now, he is a pancreatic cancer researcher at North Carolina Central University in Durham. Tony, I understand that this work is actually far enough along that you've begun working with a pharmaceutical company to potentially develop some new drug entities that may have an effect on the PIM-1.
Right. So I've been fortunate, as I said before, you know, again, the goal after finishing your postdoc is to find that niche in terms of research you can take with you and hopefully develop and become an expert, you know, over time in that particular area.
Sure.
And so I've been fortunate enough to choose a target that pharmaceutical companies are very interested in. So the idea is, yes, you find this target and you show that it's overexpressed in the tumor versus a normal, and you show that when you modulate it, you can have effects on the phenotype in terms of making cancer cells, making them more sensitive to radiation therapy as well as inhibit growth. But the idea is what makes it even more interesting is if a drug can be made against it, then that can lead to a possible therapy. Sure. And so I was fortunate that there are quite a few pharmaceutical companies out here that are greatly interested in PIM kinases and are currently working on developing PIM inhibitors. I've had the fortune of working with various companies that are actually working on developing PIM inhibitors. And actually what's exciting is that there are actually PIM inhibitors in clinical trials now. So there was one that came out initially, but unfortunately it was side effects, and so that was canceled. But since then, I think last year, there's been I think at least two companies that are now currently have PIM inhibitors. They have made PIM inhibitors, and they're in phase one clinical trials now, being tested on patients. So,
are you involved directly in any of those efforts?
So I'm involved in terms of I have the PIM inhibitor in my lab, and I'm doing studies with those inhibitors on my cells and pancreatic cancer. Because again, the idea is,
So you're doing the in vitro.
I'm doing the in vitro work, and hopefully, very soon be doing the in vivo work in terms of in animals. So we also plan on doing animal. We've done animal studies in the past, and we plan on getting that started back up again.
You mentioned that there are improved animal models for pancreatic.
Absolutely. So I think that, going back to your question you asked earlier about, why has it been such a lag in the progression of better treatments for pancreatic cancer? And I think one, in addition to the other things I suggested, such as funding and not being in the spotlight like other cancers, there's been a lack of animal models for pancreatic cancer for many years. But I would say probably over the past maybe 7 to 10 years, there's been a large influx of laboratories creating different types of pancreatic cancer animal models, mouse models, that greatly recapitulate what happens in the human. And those are great tools to have, because again, that allows you to be able to manipulate the genetics of that model to really see what gene or genes are really playing a role in the development of normal cells becoming cancerous, as well as it allows you to be able to use those models to test various drugs to see which drug will work the best in helping to modulate the cancer as well.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing some of that work in your lab at this point.
I've done some of that work in the past, and I will be doing definitely some of it in the future as well. At the end of the day, we're just trying to validate PIM kinase as a possible molecular target.
Sure.
For pancreatic cancers, as well as potentially other cancers over time as well.
Well, I understand, Tony, that PIM-1 actually represents both a druggable target, as you've described, and potentially a diagnostic biomarker for the activity of mutated KRAS in pancreatic cancers. How would that, the diagnostic side of things, how would that work in the clinical setting? Do you think that's something that we will see, and that if a drug is developed, there might be a companion diagnostic test, for example?
Right. I'm always cautious when we talk about cancer and in terms of cures and future therapies, because again, I think it's important for the audience to know that cancer research is really challenging and complicated and takes a long time to understand. And I think, and the last thing I want to do is get anybody hopes up,
right.
Of course. Prematurely. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I think various molecular targets, such as PIM kinases, may down the road be used to potentially, if not identify the cancer early, at least kind of hopefully give a better idea of outcome, survival outcome. So actually, PIM kinase has been shown to be a prognostic marker in pancreatic cancer. And so the idea is, potentially we may be able to look at PIM down the road as a way to determine one's chances of survival by having pancreatic cancer or other cancers. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of my research, what I was able to find, we're suggesting that potentially PIM may be able to kind of give us an idea of what's going on with the KRAS in pancreatic cancer. Again, as I said before, KRAS is mutated in almost all pancreatic cancers, and so with this idea that KRAS talks to PIM, PIM potentially may be able to let us know more about the role that KRAS is playing in pancreatic cancer and other cancers. And again, the idea is, at the end of the day, there's still a lot of focus on KRAS with, mm-hmm. With the hope that maybe with more research, we'll be able to have a better way to control, KRAS and to potentially make an anti-drug against KRAS.
Sure. Well, do you, I know you're very guardedly optimistic, and that is laudable, but do you envision a day, perhaps in the not too distant future, when these types of cancers will be more along the lines of a chronic disease as opposed to, as I said before, a virtual death sentence?
Right. So that's a great question. And to prepare for that question, I brought some statistics that I thought would be good for you and your audience to hear.
Great.
So the American Association for Cancer Research, AACR, has come out with a cancer update. So they come out with an update from, every few years they come out with an update on how well we are doing against cancer. And so just to kind of give you and your audience some really great optimism on what we've been able to do. So in 1971, in terms of cancer, people surviving from cancer, about 3 million survivors in 1971. So that was like 1 in 69 people, in terms of surviving cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's about when the war on cancer
exactly
started, right.
Well, right, mm-hmm. right, with Richard Nixon. Exactly. In 2012, instead of being 3 million survivors, we now have 13.7 million survivors. So now we have 1 in 23 people surviving from cancer. So mm-hmm. so again, I really think that definitely, hopefully, kind of paints the picture that we're definitely making progress when it comes to cancer research.
Sure.
And then also statistics, again, from the American Association for Cancer Research that just came out in the 2013 update. Your audience can go and look that up.
Mm-hmm.
We are able to basically save a million lives now. So between 1990 and 2012, we've been able to save about a million lives that have come down with cancer. And so, again, we're definitely making progress. And then also, I'll just say this real quick. Since September 2012 up to July 2013, there have been a development of 11 new cancer drugs, 3 new uses for previous drugs,
mm-hmm.
and we've come also out with 3 new imaging technologies for being able to image cancer. So again, I think we're definitely, making a difference. And then the last statistic I'll give you is that it's believed in 2013,
mm-hmm.
About 1.6 million people will unfortunately come down with cancer, be diagnosed with cancer. About half of them, about 580,000, are expected to die.
Sure.
So again,
within 5 years, is that 5 years?
Right. Exactly. Sure. Exactly. So again, we definitely still have a long way to go,
right.
But I hope those statistics at least give some indication of how well we are doing in terms of making cancer more of a chronic disease, if not eliminating it, completely in some patients, depending on the stage the cancer is diagnosed. So again, I do believe that there, those statistics show, quite clearly that we are making some progress. But again, as I, cautiously say, there's still a lot more work that needs to be done to be able to diagnose cancers early,
mm-hmm.
To be able to treat them better, and to be able to understand the causes of cancers. And there's some cancers that we know, tobacco smoke, we know, can lead to cancer. Our health style definitely impacts what we eat can mm-hmm. impact our developing cancer. So again, there's still a lot more work that needs to be done to better understand cancers, but we definitely have come a long way in terms of making progress to help give patients more hope when it comes to cancer.
Well, Tony, that's very encouraging to hear, and that must be the kind of thing that gets you out of bed in the morning to your credit, have chosen perhaps the toughest cancer of all. But so how much more is there to discover about pancreatic cancer? Are we really just in the early stages of getting a handle on these molecular mechanisms at work? Or have we kind of come relatively far along,
I've
given your contributions, at least in part?
I definitely think that we are still in the early stages again, as I said, we just most recently started, having the use of really good animal models that recapitulate pancreatic cancer. We just started mm-hmm. having that, whereas for many other cancers, I've had that for a long time.
Okay.
Like colon cancer, when I was studying that in grad school, there was already a model for colon cancer that had been used, but for pancreatic, there weren't really any good animal models. So I think we're still in the early stages, but that's still a lot that needs to be done. So again, for example, not everybody dies from pancreatic cancer. Why?
Right.
I mean, yes, one may detect it. It may be found early in one patient versus the other. But even if you have someone at the same stage, again, not everybody dies from it. And then, even those that do chemotherapy, there's still people that still survive from pancreatic cancer chemotherapy. So again, it's not like 100% death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And so, why is that the case? What makes that patient different from the other patient that died 6 months after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer?
That sounds like time for some hardcore genetic work.
Definitely. Again, I think it's going to take a variety of disciplines, biomedical research, genetics, cancer biology.
But you got some other great new tools that have come down the line just in the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. So again, I'm very optimistic that we are going to make, progress in this field. So for example, I just came back. I just came back last month from a conference at Columbia University. Was a 1-day pancreatic cancer meeting, and I took students with me, and we heard some of the latest research that's going on in pancreatic cancer, and it's very promising. It's very promising in terms of better understanding the tumor. So pancreatic cancer, I didn't mention this earlier, one of the issues of pancreatic cancer, it has a very dense stroma, which is the tissue that surrounds the pancreas, and it's hard to get drugs through the stroma to get to the pancreas. So the idea is, when you treat patients with these drugs, is it really getting to the pancreas
mm-hmm.
or not? That question is still, still one of the challenges that we're facing in the field, and there's a lot of research trying to understand how do you find ways to make the pancreas make the drug more accessible to the pancreas. So again, there's a lot more research. There's a lot of research that's going on as it relates to the understand the cell biology of pancreatic cancer, as well as trying to understand the genetics of pancreatic cancer. And so I'm very optimistic that just as we've made some serious headway in the other cancers, as it relates to understanding and treatments, I think we will definitely do the same for pancreatic cancer over time.
And I'm sure you're going to be hard at it for years to come, and it sounds like you have plenty to do.
Plenty.
Well, Tony, I didn't want to let our time run out without asking you also about, I understand that there is a clear disparity in pancreatic cancer diagnosis and treatment and survival outcomes among African Americans. And health disparities is kind of one of the topics I frequently talk about on this show.
Right.
Can you elaborate on those particular issues? What would you attribute those types of disparities to?
Right. That's a tough question. So let me start by saying this. So there are definitely health disparities when it comes to cancer, and unfortunately, pancreatic cancer is no exception
mm-hmm.
exception to that rule, as it relates to incidence. So for some reason, in terms of incidence, African Americans and other minorities have a greater incidence of pancreatic cancer than Caucasians and other groups. But in terms of mortality, unfortunately, there's really no health disparity. Everybody succumbs to the disease. So it was really at the incidence that mainly that you see the health disparity.
Okay.
Now, what contributes to health disparities of pancreatic cancer and other cancers? I think that's a very complicated question with a lot of parts in terms of the answers.
Sure.
I do believe that socioeconomics plays a part because as it relates to all cancers, I always tell students and I tell, everybody I meet that when it comes to cancer, really the only thing you can do is to make sure you do all you can to live a healthy lifestyle, as well as anything that seems weird or doesn't seem right, go and get checked out immediately. Don't be afraid to get physicals, annual physicals, get checked out, because the earlier you can catch the cancer, the greater your chance of survival is. I always show a graph, I always show a graph when I, give a presentation where, that if you find the cancer early, your survival rate is about 80-90%. But as the cancer progresses to, as it spreads to other organs and metastasize, it drops way down to like 9-15% survival after 5 years. So again, the earlier you can catch it, the better. So socioeconomics, I think, play a role, because if you can't afford, to go see a doctor on a regular basis, or if something seems weird, to go get it checked out, then that potentially can lead to development of cancers that probably could have been prevented or treated sooner. So right. I think that's one issue, health disparities.
Maybe the Affordable Care Act will help combat some of those disparities.
I hope so. So that's one aspect, but I hope so. I hope that does have an impact. Mm-hmm. Another challenge with health disparities, I think, is genetics. I think there are genetic differences between populations based on their genetic background, and which makes some potentially more susceptible than others to certain cancers. I believe there's also, unfortunately, discrimination and biases in terms of conscious or subconscious biases when it comes to treating certain populations that may lead to health disparities too. So I think it's a variety. Again, I think it's a variety of parts that make up that answer, and hopefully, over time, those health disparities will lessen as we learn more about these different cancers.
Well, Tony, it's been a great pleasure to have you here today on Radio In Vivo. We've learned so much about pancreatic cancer and have a lot to learn yet, but your work is certainly shedding new light and generating new hope. So thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
And we've got some great guests lined up in the coming weeks here on Radio In Vivo. You can check the website, radioinvivo.net, for our lineup of upcoming shows. And we are on Facebook, so we invite you to become a fan and stay up to date that way. And we're also on iTunes now, so you can subscribe to the podcast and keep up to date in that fashion. Join us again next time for Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community right here on volunteer-powered WCOM-FM, Carborough and Chapel Hill. And now we ask that you stay tuned for one of our most popular shows on the WCOM schedule, The Courage Cocktail with Leanne McClymont. Catch you next time. Thanks for listening.